Everyone has a story. Everyone travels a road. Some of those roads are paved, some are gravel, some are a combination. Some are superhighways. Some of us have met with sharp turns, intersections, and delays. We travel at different speeds to different destinations. On this podcast, we talk about your road to now. Welcome to Your Road to Now. Today I sit down with Ryan Kononoff. I got that right that time, eh?
You did.
Welcome, Ryan. Can you just start off and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Ryan Kononoff. I'm based out of Abbotsford, called BC home for the better part of two decades now. And originally born and raised in Ontario, spent a stint of my life in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and more recently in the Fraser Valley.
Let's start back in like high school. You're born, where were you born?
Born in Ontario, Pembroke, Ontario.
Where in Ontario?
Pembroke, Ontario.
Yeah. And so high school there or?
No, moved to, Manitoba when I finished grade three. So grade four, I started in Winnipeg.
So you're in Winnipeg. How long in Winnipeg?
Winnipeg for 8 years, 8.5 years. Mm-hmm. And then on to, Saskatchewan, Regina, Saskatchewan, where I did grade 11 and 12.
So slowly across, working your way west.
Moved my way west, and of course...
Is that your parents had different jobs kind of thing, and they were working their way through?
Or? Yeah, exactly. And of course, by the time you find yourself to the west coast, it's hard to
leave once
east.
You get out there, yeah, because once you see this, it's hard to go back to Saskatchewan. Not that there's anything wrong with Saskatchewan, right, but...
It's a beautiful spot. It's a great place to be from.
That's right. Yeah, I say that all the time too, because I've done Manitoba and then Alberta too. And it's got some, like the Northern Lights in Northern Alberta.
Beautiful.
Amazing, yeah. Right? But the weather,
sunsets.
Not so amazing.
Yeah, not the winter is definitely the least desirable time to
So when
visit.
You got out to BC, when did you get out here and where did you end up?
I got here just after, I guess, 2002. We moved to Mission with my folks. I had finished college and had an opportunity to have a free ticket out here and a relatively inexpensive place to live and enjoying things like skiing and hiking and whatnot. It was a no-brainer for me.
Yeah. So you started your career after college?
After college, yeah. So my first real... sort of career job was out in Chilliwack, actually. After we moved here, I took a few months to explore and really enjoy the outdoors. Being from the prairies, there's not a lot mm-hmm. to offer as far as hiking and I learned to ski on something we really call a toboggan hill now. And so I spent about 3 months just meeting people and exploring before I was sort of encouraged by my folks to get a job and start being productive. And that's sort of where my career started.
So what was that first job?
First job was in a call center. I worked for a company at the time called Stream out in Chilliwack, and they do tech support for different contracts like Microsoft and HP. And worked there for about 4.5 months. It was a humbling role in the sense that I felt overqualified for a lot of what I was doing, but looking back, it was a remarkable experience. It was a great way to learn not only how to run a call center, but how to deliver exceptional customer service.
So were you doing outbound or inbound?
Inbound calling.
Inbound.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So then you made a decision to leave there and go where?
Yeah. So back in high school, I had just to rewind a little bit. I was in a info processing class in grade 9, and a couple of us were goofing off and I was sent out to the hall and the teacher who was tasked with dealing with me, disciplining me, whatever you want to call it, he sort of took an interest in me and identified a bit of a I would call it a passion, but an interest of mine, and he took me under his wing. He happened to be the guy that was responsible for running a lot of the network and the servers at the school. And he made a commitment to me. And in turn, I had to make a commitment to him to settle down in class, and he showed me the ropes. And so that was sort of my introduction to IT back in grade 10. That summer, they hired me, the school hired me for the summer to build out a number of, a couple of new computer labs. And that planted a seed that then later became a career aspiration for me, which was to be a network administrator or systems administrator. And that was the first job that I had leaving Stream. So a job opportunity came up, applied for the job, got the job, left Stream for that next role, which was information systems administrator for a large GM dealership in Abbotsford.
And how long did you stay there?
I was there for about 2 years. I was sort of the generalist there. Had an opportunity to have a lot of different touch points in the organization. Basically, if it plugged in, I was kind of the guy they went to.
Call Ryan. My computer doesn't work. Call Ryan.
Yep. Yeah, everything from like satellites. They had a satellite training system that they used to the phones to the web. Like all of it was sort of in my domain. And I was kind of given free rein. Like the owner was fairly... I reported to the owner and he was fairly removed from that side of the business. And they kind of just said, you know, look after things. And, and it was a really cool opportunity.
And then...
And then over the 2 years that I was there, I had a mentor who I would meet with regularly and go for lunch. And he kept saying, you got to come to Prospera. You got to come to Prospera. And he at the time was a network analyst at Prospera. And he eventually an opening came up and I applied for it, got the job. And then I shuffled over to Prospera for another 2.5 years there, where I was in their head office and had the opportunity to, again, be a bit of a generalist. I was able to build out a data center. In addition to that, build out some new technologies, implement virtualization, which at the time was a fairly new concept. And just a lot of different touch points in their organization that gave me a lot of exposure to business and
so you're building a strong base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I was there 2.5 years. And then, same mentor moved over to Simon Fraser University. And again, we would meet and he kept telling me, you got to come to SFU, you got to come to SFU. And so naturally I followed him to SFU when a job opening came up and that was the last job that I had where I wasn't working for my own businesses and in my time there filled two different roles, but again, infrastructure, servers, data centers, right, that kind of thing for 4.5 years.
And then you started your own business after that, or?
Well, all along I had businesses. Okay. So they were always side hustles, different companies that I had.
You were side hustling before it became a thing.
I was. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'd go to work every day. I'd come home and I'd, you know, work on whatever I had going on at the time. And really that goes back to, you know, my childhood. Things like, you know, I think about sort of my first side hustle is delivering papers and selling chocolate almonds and kind of those little entrepreneurial opportunities that kids get when they're growing up. But we had a company that we had started in 04 or 05 actually, when I was at Prospera. And it was wrapped into another company that we started in 09. And while I was at SFU, that company had grown and then I had started a few other companies. One of them was in real estate. And when I left SFU, my focus was kind of split between those two. So real estate and ClearBridge, which was a tech business.
And what did ClearBridge do? What was kind of like the premise for ClearBridge?
Yeah, so it was a merger of three companies. There were originally four partners. The first company, our company, was an email security company. So email was kind of our expertise. We had developed a lot of experience there. And we brought in a partner who was running a web company at the time. That was something our customers were asking us for some expertise there. And then the third entity was more of a hands-on business, so more of consulting the physical infrastructure side of things. So we kind of wrapped those three together. Our original slogan was bridging the gap between business and technology. and kind of taking a lot of the lessons that I learned over the years around how business runs and what's important, and how technology can support that. But there's often this divide between those two, and so we wanted to be that connection
bridge,
point.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you kind of built throughout your, after you left school, kind of built on that information systems,
mm-hmm.
and took advantage of that when you started your company.
Mm-hmm.
And how long were you doing that? How long was ClearBridge before you sold it?
Well, so still run ClearBridge today.
Oh, okay.
Haven't sold that yet. And I would say no real plans to sell ClearBridge either. Things can always change, but we started that company in 2009, so we've been running just over a decade now, and a lot of growth, a lot of change. Sort of, you know, our business has listened to our customers, and we've evolved with the changing needs of not just the market around us, but you know, the growth of our customers. So when we originally started, you know, we kind of had these three things. We ended up scaling back to two of them, and then because one of the partners was full-time and the rest of us were side hustling, we kind of naturally gravitated to the website of things. And it's about 6 years ago I bought my partners out of the business, and then we shifted focus from predominantly web to what I'll call business process improvement, supported by technology, but really focused on helping our customers to do their best work.
So you're active in that today then?
I am. Yeah. I mean, we've built up a great team around us, and we've had a lot of growth over the last five and 6 years. But that's my daily gig.
Who's your ideal customer then?
We're very much focused on companies that are growing. So growth-based customers, but customers that put a lot of value on their people. So we're there to kind of help them get the most out of their people, not in a poor way, but in a way that, you know, helps people do their best work when they show up, to be as productive as they can be, to love the work that they're doing, because technology is not getting in the way, or process isn't getting in the way of you know, doing double entry or you know, doing a process one way that you know, could ultimately be automated. So we spend a lot of time helping people to get more back out of their time.
So what about Ryan? What's Ryan? Do you got a farm? Is it?
Yeah.
I see photos on your Instagram.
Yes. So 2018, we over the years, as I mentioned, I have had a couple of businesses, and so I've co-founded some companies. I've bought and sold some companies.
That's what I was wondering. Like,
yeah, like, there's a few moving pieces here. So we'll rewind a bit here. So about 7 years ago, I was approached by a neighbor at the time who had been involved in some real estate investments with me, and he had a passion for mountain biking and had sort of by accident started and grown this business out of his closet in his condo, and approached me and said, "Hey, I've got this online business. I don't know anything about online, and it's sort of been growing out of control. Would you be interested in partnering with me in this?" And kind of looked at the business, and as a avid adventurer, I love to ski and mountain bike and hike and all those things. There was kind of a unique opportunity to mix play and work, and mm-hmm. so. The opportunity makes sense, invested in the startup. And so, that company in tandem with ClearBridge has been growing at more, my role there was more from an advisory perspective. And that company had a commercial space in Abbotsford that really wasn't ideal for our target demographic as far as staffing goes. So, you know, hiring guys that are into mountain bikes and, you know, they want to be in nature. They don't want to be mm-hmm. in the middle of an industrial park. And our lease was up and rent was going up considerably. And we sort of looked at that and said, well, does it really make sense for us to be here? Or is there a better place that we could grow this company? And so we started to look at the opportunity to maybe, you know, buy some land and build it out that way. And at the same time, real estate values in the Fraser Valley were just skyrocketing. Land was becoming really unaffordable, and wanted space for my kids to be able to run around, and you know, just seeing an opportunity for you know, potential development down the road, whatever the case might be, thought, well, it's a good time to maybe get some land. So we bought a farm, and the one of our key criteria was some large outbuildings that we could right. run this part of the, you know, part of those outbuildings could run this business through. And so we found a spot in Yarrow, and got a nice creek through the property. We're on about 7 acres. There's a beautiful farmhouse in the front, and our plan was to rent that out just to you know, regular monthly rental, mm-hmm. As far as a tenant goes. And we started marketing it and found that the tenants who were applying applying to rent that place, they just didn't give us the impression that they were going to look after the pool and the yard and that right. kind of thing. There's a lot of yard work out in the valley. Things don't die in the winter and they keep growing. And so we ended up taking the realtor's photos who sold the property. We put it on Airbnb, and a week later we had our first booking. And this was sort of what set us off to, okay, this is a great fit for us. Mm-hmm. We can have, the home sleeps 18 people. We can have family reunions out there. It's close to Cultus Lake, lots of space, beautiful pool. And so that was sort of that part of the property. And then in the back, we had this large, we'll call it a barn or a shop. And it was in rough shape. Like it had, trees growing through eaves troughs and blackberry bushes growing inside. And so we did a huge renovation, which we're just finishing now, 2 years later. We sort of just did section by section as we run around, and that business runs out of part of that shop space.
And what is that business?
So that's Noble Wheels, we run a couple of different entities, sort of that leverage the same people, but ultimately we produce, we manufacture carbon wheels through a manufacturing partner in China. We build carbon wheels out of that facility, and then we ship them all over North America from there. So that runs out of there, and then in the back 4 acres we have a Christmas tree farm. So we're about six.
So you got lots of stuff going on.
Yes, the property's highly utilized. It's
so
productive.
Who keeps track of all this stuff? Is that you, or is it your wife, or who's doing all this stuff?
mostly me. I mean, I definitely have some help. We've got some staff that help with everything from managing the Airbnb inquiries to customer service to the cleaning and turnovers, to the physical side of things. You know, making sure the pool's cleaned and maintained and the yard's kept clean. I definitely have some help from my parents who are retired but like to stay busy. And
so you're running one of those businesses that a lot of people talk about on the internet where, you know, like you're sourcing product from China or getting it manufactured in China and then assembling it and putting it together here and then shipping it around the world.
Yeah.
How is that working?
Well, right now, there's definitely some challenges.
Right now, for sure, yeah. In the last couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah, we had plans to fly to China for some meetings within the last month, and obviously that, you know, that's not happening. So it definitely that has presented some challenges, but obviously the geographic, you know, space between us, you know, time zones, physically getting there, it's challenging. But we have some really remarkable people that we're partnered with there, and that's a really kind of unique story to itself, just how that came to be. But ultimately, you know, we make it work. We make it work. So the rims are manufactured there, hubs and spokes, and all the other parts of the wheel they come from all over the world. Some of which come from
the final assembly kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's a bit of an art to that. Yeah. You know, to building a wheel and ensuring that it's true and so that's really where we do a lot of that work here. We do a lot of the product development, both here and in China.
So lots of branding and stuff like that too to get it up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you using a lot of social media to kind of to get that out there? Are you using like Instagram, Facebook, and that to sell your products, or
Instagram?
Instagram
yeah. For sure. Yeah. So all of the sales are directly through our website. I shouldn't say all of the. We do have some relationships with some bike shops and distributors, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But most of our business comes directly through our website, and a lot of our, you know, our biggest marketing advantage has been our social media following. That's been huge for that company.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people are really kind of interested in that model, and a lot of people are not sure where to start. What would you say to them if they were kind of like thinking, hey, I want to do something, and I want to, you know, I know there's a lot of kind of like scammy ones out there, just like start your dropship business today and stuff like that. But I mean, I think anything, you have to go do the work and source the parts and do the stuff, right?
Well, that's just it. I mean, it takes hard work. And you see the ads on YouTube or Facebook, you know, everywhere. Start your business, work from home,
4 hours a week.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, you might get there eventually, but at 40 hours a week isn't going to get you to start. It takes a tremendous amount of effort. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is a lot of failure. You know, the first thing we tried didn't work. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of failure to get to, you know, find that one thing that did work.
So how did you originally source the parts? Did you actually go to China to find the?
Originally we didn't. So my partner had found them online and started working with this factory. And when our company started to grow, we realized pretty quickly that we needed to get to China to actually see the working conditions. This was at the time when a lot of big companies like Apple were blowing up in the media around working mm-hmm. conditions. And that just wasn't something that I could get behind if those conditions were in fact anything like what we had seen on the media. And so we booked some flights and not only did we tour the factory that we had been working with, but we went and toured a number of factories. We flew to Taiwan, toured a number of factories there, and it was eye opening. Mm-hmm. We were shocked by, so most of the world's bike parts are actually made in Taiwan.
Right.
And that was, you know, what we expected out of our tour was to go to China, see that everything was really like working conditions were very poor. Quality control was very poor. Then we'd go to Taiwan and everything was going to be amazing. And we actually found the opposite. Hmm. We found that, we walked into one factory in Taiwan where, there were people napping on cardboard on concrete floors next to barrels of highly toxic chemicals. And from the boardroom, we could it just smelled terrible. Like you could smell the chemicals in through the office space. And so that was really discouraging for us. And as far as Taiwan goes, but looking back at what we had seen in China, it was really, just reaffirming for us that we had made a great choice without really even knowing it at the time, and had partnered with some great people who really cared about their staff and treated them really well and had a safe, clean, working environment for them.
So what do you see as like the future of retail? Cause that typically was a retail business, right? Like, you know, bike shops, you know, and here you are, you're starting kind of a bike shop and a farm and kind of shipping around the world. And it's more about the brand and I think a lot of businesses have started like that, and they kind of sell that brand, and they're more innovative and creative and stuff like that. And they're not, I guess they're creating the parts and selling the parts, as opposed to, you know, I'm not going to slag bike shops, but a lot of them are just reselling parts, yep. right? Like reselling your parts sometimes too, right? So
yep.
How do you see that? Like, how do you see that playing out?
I think the big thing for me is value and everything I do in life, you know, it's, I'm very value oriented. In other words, I want to be sure that, where value is sought, value is had. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at bike shops and sort of any retail play, the Apple model really plays true. I was just listening to an audiobook on the drive here, and they were just talking about how Apple's vision wasn't to sell product through their store. It was to create community and to create a support experience that set them aside and ultimately created ambassadors for their own product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I look at retail outfits that are doing a great job of that, I really see, that community aspect is really important to them. They're they're building ambassadors, obviously they're building their brand, but they're providing a lot of value that mm-hmm. supports what they're selling, but it isn't, the value isn't what they're selling, because you can go find that online, mm-hmm. probably for less.
Yeah. No, we see that lots nowadays with, you know, like Lululemon and stuff like that too, right? People really attach themselves to brands they really kind of fall in love with, right? And become ambassadors for the salespeople. And if you look at Elon Musk, he's a classic example, and you drive a Tesla.
Yep.
Classic example. The guy says he doesn't do any marketing. I would argue that that's all he does is marketing, but he doesn't do traditional marketing in a sense, right? He allows his people to do his marketing. His people are his customers, right?
Totally. And you look at, you know, when they're slammed, when they release a new vehicle, and they don't have the resources in-house to actually deliver those cars, they recruit their customers on a volunteer basis to come in and hand over keys to new vehicles to the new customers and to train them on how to use it. I mean, no one else in the world does
that. No one can make Kool-Aid like Elon Musk, right?
No, it's
pretty amazing. And you know, they, a lot of people went, and I signed up for the Cybertruck just because it's awesome. Great marketing.
Yeah.
But it looks like a bad PBS kind of like truck rolls out, right? Like, I doubt if that's what it's going to look like when it finally rolls out. But when they smash the windows and people are just like, oh, it's a disaster. I'm like, no, that was almost every news station around the world.
It was free marketing for them. Oh, it was just like everyone crazy, was talking right? about Tesla.
And he was laughing when he said, throw the other one. So that was hilarious. Yeah, I know he's done some great kind of stuff with that brand for sure. And he's also simplified the brand when he's like, he doesn't like, you know, typically GM, when you go to order a GM, you could spend about 3 hours going through all the options. And I think in Tesla, I think you get like three options.
Yeah, and they're constant. Like I think the key for them is they're constantly evolving that. So sometimes they'll add options. They'll realize that no one wants three of them, and they'll get rid of mm-hmm. those three options, and they'll simplify. And over the years, we just have seen that continue to evolve, where something that's available today maybe isn't available tomorrow because no one wants it.
So how long have you had your Tesla?
We are just about a year and a half now.
Yeah, and how is it?
Awesome. Yeah, 51,000 kilometers on it in a year and a half. And I mean, we've got two vehicles that, you know, mm-hmm. we drive. And so I think the experience is really, the experience of being a Tesla owner is what I bought and mm-hmm. what I love. You know, a car is a car, it's four wheels, it gets right. you somewhere. But, you know, the perpetual software updates, the reliability, the support, you know, they come out to my home or our office mm-hmm. to do, you know, any maintenance work that needs to be done on it, it's pretty cool.
It kind of like, I mean, he's done a really good job of disrupting the industry. And again, what's funny about that is GM back in the 80s was the largest corporation in the world. There was a book, I don't know if you ever read it, was On a Clear Day You Can See GM. And it was basically the biggest corporation in the world. Like, you know, they'd said if GM rolled over the rest of the world, you know, if they caught a cold, everybody else had the flu mm-hmm. or whatever. So, and here comes a car company out of nowhere. And it has a bigger market cap than Ford and GM combined, and basically eating their lunch, right? And doing a better job and way ahead in almost all aspects. And even if you think about it, they don't really have dealerships, and where most of the other automakers still have a lot of investment in real estate. And here's, I don't know, like how many dealerships are there for basically you order the car online?
You order it online. I think they've applied that same retail concept that we just talked about, which is provide value. You don't have to, those locations don't exist to sell cars.
Yeah, they so you're putting the value educate. Into the car as opposed yep. to into the real estate or the land that
totally.
That you need to sell cars, and it's just completely different. And I think a lot of people are having a tough time getting their head around it. Do you know what I mean? Because there's so much investment in the current infrastructure in that, and I think. And it's no different than traditional media. Like they have such an investment into what they do that they haven't been able to shift into the new world. And it's kind of a,
well, that's the advantage they have. Like mm-hmm. They're nimble in that sense. They yeah. don't have, you know, I was reading an article just a few days about their supply chain and how, you know, they have a huge competitive advantage because they don't have these, you know, decade, you know, or half century long, you know, relationships with all of these suppliers. They can kind of do what makes sense given the product they're trying to produce, and they own a lot of their technology too, which makes them, you know, even
well, yeah, the battery more. Technology is light years ahead of everybody else. I mean, that's the biggest problem for most people is the mm-hmm. is the batteries. They can't get the the mileage out of them or the kilometers, right? That,
yep.
that they're getting out of those ones. Yeah. So that's kind of a cool model, and you're kind of using a similar model and how you're getting your stuff done. He's done a great job in China with getting a plant up and running really quickly. I'm sure there's some roadblocks right now, but
yes, yeah. But you know, they set a world record for getting a facility of that size up in that short period of time. They beat their projections, and
it's kind of a different world, right? Like here's a guy like you that, how much, other than you were riding mountain bikes and stuff, how much, you know, did you have for knowledge in mountain bikes other than finding somebody else that liked mountain bikes and kind of putting it together?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a huge learning curve for me. Yeah. But I'm still learning every day, and I think that's the key part of it is as I mentioned earlier, you got to fall down. You got to try things, and 9 of those 10 things won't work.
So you're still relatively young. Any more ideas percolating? Any more things you want to do?
Every day. That's part of my challenge is reining those ideas in and staying focused. But right now, you know, our tech company is really growing, and that's been, you know, a key focus for me and a key challenge of people around me, just to say, hey, there's a huge opportunity here. What are you doing to focus on that?
Mm-hmm. So if you could go back to 20-year-old you, just as, I guess you had a lot of great mentors, is there something you would say to yourself?
I was raised in a home where failure was encouraged, where learning was encouraged, and so I feel like, you know, when you go back and you look at, you know, your 20-year-old self, if you choose to do anything different, you wouldn't have learned the lessons you've learned. And so I think for me, I'd probably go back and do them all over again, because that's ultimately what got me to where I am today. So I don't think I'd have any advice other than keep
just
failing and
life,
just brush your knees off and get right back up.
What scares you right now in the world? Like what's got you kind of like worried for your kids and for you?
Oh, I think one thing that as a tech guy, you know, technology is obviously a big part of what I do. But I see it in so many different parts of, you know, school to, you know, raising kids. It's almost become this crutch, and there's so many schools that are really, investing in technology. And I feel like, I mean, I see why they're doing it, but I'm scared that you know, my kids are not going to have the opportunity. And you know, obviously, we're doing everything we can to avoid that. But you know, I feel like kids nowadays, they don't learn how to communicate, they don't learn how to interact. You know, they don't learn how to just go outside and play because they've got screens everywhere. And you know, even in school, I was speaking with some students at a high school last week, and you know, the lack of pen and paper and like there's just so much digitization in our world now that I feel like they're missing a huge opportunity to just, you know, to live a simple mm-hmm. life and to appreciate the things like nature that's around us and to get outside So I think that's my big worry, is that, you know, this digitalization, you know, that as a business, you know, all of us are so focused on digitizing processes and automating. Yeah. I mean, there's good
to automation. That, but... Does that scare you or excite you? Like, you have a car that can drive itself.
Yep.
So scary or cool?
Well, I love it. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you've, mm-hmm. you know, you've seen some of my posts about that, but, I think it's important to, as much as we automate, it's still, you know, you still got to know how to work for it. You still got to know mm-hmm. how to do those manual things. Otherwise we'll become a society full of, you know, even more so full of lazy people and, mm-hmm. and people that want everything handed to them and done for them. And so I think automation is a good thing. But we just have to be careful what we're automating perhaps.
So where does AI fit into you? What do you think? Like, how far away are we from real AI and, you know, where the robots start creating their own robots? Because I think that's the tipping point.
Yeah.
Right now, we're still making it, and then we're calling it AI. But when when the robot can do the calculations or the automation can do the calculations and do the next steps that we do, I think that's like, you know, like jet fuel on a fire, right? Like, I mean, that, because even right now, our time to realization on an invention is so small compared to what it was. Oh. And, you know, 1800, when we look at, if you look through history, you'll see that time gap getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So just think what artificial intelligence can do to the next realization of a new technology.
Yeah, I mean, I always look at technology as an opportunity for people to move up the stack, mm-hmm. As opposed to doing jobs that are, you know, have more labor associated with them, to do what we're great at, which is thinking, right. Problem solving. You know, when we get to that next level where we don't need to problem solve because the computers are capable of doing that.
They might think we're the problem.
Well, and that, I mean, that's the conspiracy theory and the fear that, you know, that certainly exists out there.
When they do the zero sum game and they're just like, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know what? I think part of me even has a hard time wrapping my mind around, you know, what that could look like. You know, like anything, there's going to be some tremendous upside with that. But I think there's also going to be people that are and perhaps entire societies that are left behind. You know,
how far away do you think we are from, like?
Well, I guess it depends on what degree. Mm-hmm. Like my, you know,
when a robot starts, they start doing their own intelligence. When they can kind of piggyback off an idea and create ideas. Because I think that's the real crux of it, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
because right now it's add ifs, right? Add if this, do this. Add if this, that's do right. this.
Well, yeah. I think we're farther out than we think. Mm. You know, I feel like there's a lot that, I mean, I feel like in many ways the hardware is there, hardware is capable. The software maybe is starting to be capable, but it's just understanding what this can do and how to have it do those things, right. And then just the general acceptance of that. Like mm-hmm. I feel like that's, you know, even autopilot on my car, which isn't AI. It's just, you know, it's
that, if this, do
absolutely.
This.
You know, the general acceptance around that is. You know, it's high for Tesla owners. They're the early adopters. But, right. You know, anyone who's not a Tesla, I mean, there's Tesla owners out there who won't even use the feature because, you know, what if? And so I feel like that's going to be the biggest stumbling block for the progression of that. Hmm.
So let's do a little bit of quickfire.
Sure.
So how familiar are you with Kelowna?
Not very.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know how to get to the supercharger.
Yeah, the supercharger. There you go. You know where all the superchargers are. So let's go with the Lower Mainland. If we're going down to the Lower Mainland,
yeah,
Chilliwack, Abbotsford, is there a place you got to go dine down there? Is there a place you got to go?
So I'm the opposite of my wife. I'm so not a foodie. For me, food is just a bit of a necessary
substance.
Means, but yeah. But that being said, we've got a great spot in old downtown Abbotsford, just down the street from our office, called Bow and Stern. It's a little one of. I'm not a seafood guy, but they make a great burger, and the company that I'm there with always loves the food there. So
if you're pitching Abbotsford to anybody, like what's the draw?
I mean, Abbotsford's really changed. It's really grown in the last 5 years. But, you know, we're kind of uniquely positioned. We're right on the border, which gives us, you know, great access mm-hmm. down to the U.S.
That's a nice quiet crossing, really. Yeah. Because a lot of people don't know about that crossing. They kind of go to the Blaine crossing and stuff like that. But that Abbotsford one, I've gone through it a few times. It's usually there's nobody there.
Yep. Yeah, it's a great spot. I mean, we still, you know, go down through there all the time to buy gas and that kind of thing. But Abbotsford, you know, we've got hiking and mountain biking, like great hiking and mountain mm-hmm. biking right in town. Like, you don't have to leave, you know, right in my backyard practically. Mm-hmm. And then we're close to everything from skiing to close to the city. I mean, it's not a huge trek into Vancouver. You can have a bit of space and yet you know, it's still affordable.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Beautiful area for sure. Lots of rain.
Lots of rain. Yeah, that's why I'm out here though.
Things grow well down there for sure.
They do. Yeah, creates lots of work. I mean, people were cutting their grass in my neighborhood last week. So
how close are they? They're kind of growing. Abbotsford's a little further away from Langley and stuff like that, though. Yeah. But like Langley, Surrey, kind of all kind of like melted into each other, really.
Yeah, and Abbotsford in particular it's all farmland. Like it's all zoned mm-hmm. ALR, and so there's only so much room. You know, you've got the river, the border, farmland all around Chilliwack and Langley. There's just not a lot of room to build, and so in the last couple of years we've started to see Abbotsford build up, and real estate values just skyrocket. And I don't know if it's still the case, but it was more expensive to buy a single family home in Abbotsford than it was in Langley. Hmm.
And then, so for a lot of us from Kelowna, we go over the connector and we get to Chilliwack. We stop for lunch because mm-hmm. it's easy to get off the highway.
Yep.
Is there a reason we should go to Abbotsford instead?
Chilliwack's great too.
It's easy to get off the highway there, right? So you're right there, and all the stuff's right there. Abbotsford's kind of like you don't really see much of Abbotsford from the highway there.
The hidden gem in Abbotsford to me is the old downtown Abbotsford, which is off the Sumas exit, head just into town. And there's a lot of great little one-ofs there, and they've sort of done this revitalization of that's where our business is based, mm-hmm. and great little coffee shops and stores and that kind of thing. And a lot of residential has been building up in that area, so it's become a pretty neat little spot.
Awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Thanks for having me. It's great. Great to be here. Great to enjoy this spectacular view.
It's an epic view for sure.
Czech Creative Office here.
How can people find you online? Or do you want them to find you online?
Yeah, pretty easy to find online. Twitter is Ryan Kononoff. I'm on LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn, and then and the bike stuff?
It's all linked through there. Noblewheels.com, NOBLwheels.com. And happy to connect.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for sharing your story, your road to now. You got a really good one, road to now with the bike wheels, right?
That's right.
Bye now.
Thanks.
If you'd like to be part of this podcast, we'd love to share your story and your road to now.